Welcome back, my fellow creatives. Here we are at You've Got 5 Pages to Tell Me It's Good, where I grab a new release from my local library to see if it can indeed, in 5 pages, tell me it's good. Now, I have here what's labeled a chilling psychological thriller. And it says that in all capitals, right above the author's name. So that must mean it is indeed a chilling psychological thriller. So the author is Dan Padavona, and the book is called Her Last Breath, and it apparently is the first book of a Wolf Lake thriller series, and I probably sound a little offbeat, a little sassy reading this. There's something to telling people, look, this is going to be chilling. I don't know. It just seems a little presumptive. But hey, when you're looking at the back and you see he's hunting a psychopath, and now the killer wants him dead. Dun dun dun. Okay, we're gonna get into a cat and mouse type of situation, which is fine. Those can be wonderful, excellent stories, especially when you're seeing the chess pieces move and play out, and you're not entirely sure what strategy is getting used, so you're waiting to see what happens next. Hey, love it. But I am not familiar with Dan Padavona. I'm not familiar with a lot of writers. So it's going to be exciting to see what this particular writing style is like. I am excited to see that there isn't a prologue, and now that I'm glancing at this, this is an indie read. So that's actually kind of exciting. We've got an indie published book at my local library. That does not happen often. So hooray. Let's see how this indie writer creates the chilling psychological thriller. Okay, chapter one. Erica folded the John's money and tucked it between her hip and thong. His footsteps shuffled away until she didn't hear them anymore. These were the moments she cherished. The alone time inside the motel room before the staff kicked her out and the next guests bustled in. With a yawn, she swung her legs off the mattress and dangled her feet over the salt and pepper carpet. A hard spot congealed in the fibers. She grimaced and tried not to imagine how it got there. A door slammed in the next room. Voices rose as a man and woman argued through the walls. This used to be a nice motel. When she was a kid, tourist families stayed at the Wolf Lake Inn. It was a destination spot. You saved money all year to afford a resort like this one. 5 years ago, with the local economy in the toilet and the inn on the verge of closing, the family who owned Wolf Lake Inn sold to an outside bidder. The new inn developed a run-down, shady look to it. Warped and peeling shingles, chipped paint, and gaudy neon sign with two letters dead to the world. This room used to cost $200 a night during the glory years. Now it was $59 with a coupon, and if you knew the owner by name, you could rent it by the hour. Erica padded to the bathroom and tucked brunette locks behind her ear. The carpet made brittle, crunching noises beneath her feet. She wished for a thick pair of socks or slippers, but those wouldn't match the stiletto heels. She flicked the light and squinted. According to the mirror, she was 18 going on 45. Skin draped off her face like a sharp haze. Okay. Her flesh looked like the paste the teacher handed out in third grade art class. She ran the water and splashed her face. The cake dom makeup ran in black and red streaks until she scrubbed her skin clean. She wouldn't be working again tonight, not with this face. Thank God the John got it over with quick. He'd outweighed her by 100 pounds and had a back full of hair that made it seem like she had caressed a bear. She held her breath while he finished, and her ribs still ached from his girth. She slogged to the bed and fell on the mattress. The room was hers for another 40 minutes. Erica set the alarm and closed her eyes, her sore, exhausted body slipping into sleep. A second later, an angry fist pounded on the door. "Go away," she said, piling the extra pillow over her ear. "You leave room," said Rio. She recognized the innkeeper's voice. New guest stays all night. Housekeeping come in 10 minutes. You be gone or I call police. Right. Rhea wouldn't call the police. Girls like Erica kept his inn afloat. More pounding on the door got her moving. All right, all right. Hold your scrotum and give me a minute to get dressed. I have to pause for a moment here. Well, we are getting a lot of context, which is nice. It's tricky with context, though, because you end up risking falling into the exposition dump territory, and our first page is kind of like that, where we're getting the whole history of this inn where she's staying, this prostitute is staying. We really don't need all of that right there. I mean, it's okay to say this is a rundown hotel and go back to talking about its glory days a little later, or at least like when you're stepping out of the room and you can look back at it. You know, it just, but it seemed like an odd place to have to go into the whole history of this location. Is that slowed the momentum of the John leaving Erica alone and her being relieved that that job was over. It brings that momentum to a halt. So, but again, I know it's tricky trying to figure out where do you establish your setting. And it's one thing to establish a setting. It's another to establish its history. History probably could have waited a little bit yet. Anyway, let's see how this continues on. Erica ripped the shirt over her head and stepped into her skirt, the hem almost high enough to reveal the thong. Her feet protested the second she pulled the stilettos on. Outside the door, someone dragged a rolling suitcase. She was almost to the door when she remembered the money. The folded bill sat on her hip until it became one with her sweaty skin. She pocketed the money and shielded her eyes from the gaudy neon sign. Rio glared from the office. She wanted to flip him off, but she needed Rio as much as he needed her. Her purse strap hanging off her shoulder, Erica clicked across the blacktop and angled toward the sidewalk. The money felt thin inside her pocket. Didn't we just say it became one with her sweaty skin? Okay, anyway. A cold thought dripped into her chest before she ripped the money from her pocket and counted the bills. Damn it! The John had ripped two bills in half. The scumbag stiffed her. A helpless tear clouded her eyes as she imagined what Troy would do. Troy Dean ran the 315 Royals, the Harmon gang surrounded by whispers of white supremacy. Their rivals, the predominantly black Harmon kings, controlled the west side of the city, the Royals ruling over the east, including the city's red light district. Hence, the 315 Royals ran Harmon's prostitution. The kings wanted in on the Royals' business, and tensions rose between the two factions. Last week, a Royals member shot into a club owned by the Harmon kings, a message to back off their prostitution business. Again, do we really need this right now? I mean, it's okay to be clearly worried that your pimp's gonna get pissed. That's an understandable fear. But here we were just told that this is like a resort destination, but it's a part of a city too? Now, granted, that's my own Midwestern naivete talking, because resorts tend to be in rural locations so that you're not tied to urban life at all. You're escaping urban life. Maybe that's just a different thing elsewhere, I guess. As all, so you're not going to get into the city from a rural resort, but maybe this place is like on the edge of the city. I don't know. So regardless, but breaking down a gang rivalry right here and now, again, it's an odd place to be sticking this context that we really don't need right this moment. Let's see how this keeps going. She wouldn't call Troy. The last time she came up short, he blackened her eye and promised the next time would be worse. Her stomach growled. She hadn't eaten since breakfast, and it was 10 minutes until midnight. How would she get back to Harmon? The city sat 5 miles north of Wolf Lake, and she couldn't afford a taxi. Okay, well, there we go. It is outside of town. Thank you. Got it. I told you to leave, Rio called from the doorway. I'm on the sidewalk. You bad for business. You go. Swallowing a sob, Erica turned her head and stomped down the concrete walkway past the closed dress shops. Though spring arrived in upstate New York, winter's breath returned at night, as though the cold hid within the shadows and ventured out after sunset. With the scourge of the Wolf Lake Inn behind her, the boulevard gave way to quaint village homes. Wolf Lake drowned in money. She could get used to a place like this. In her fantasies, she owned a little home beside the water with a garden in the backyard. Grapes snaked up a trellis along the side of the house. With no better plan, she turned north, the darkness too thick to make out the street signs. Okay, I guess we're done dreaming about the house. Okay. She didn't have the strength to walk all the way back to Harmon, and the sheriff's department sat 2 miles from the inn. If a deputy caught her walking through the village, she'd spend the night in a cell. Troy would kill her if he needed to bail her out. Flashing headlights brought her head around. She was ready to step out of her heels and run, but it wasn't a sheriff's cruiser. A white SUV crawled along the curb. The driver flashed his lights again. The SUV slowed when it caught up, the driver pacing her as she followed the walkway. He drove a Chevrolet Trax. She recognized the make. A 315 Royals member named Flacco bought a used model last winter. The stranger's buzzed hair appeared white as if he dyed it. His head lingered close to the SUV's roof, his muscles rippling beneath his t-shirt. A good-looking guy in his middle or late 20s. Red splotches marred his face, like he fell into a patch of poison ivy or had an allergic reaction to a bee sting. "You wanna ride?" the man asked after lowering the window. Ignoring him, she walked arrow straight past the sleepy residences, many with gated driveways. "Long way from home, aren't you? Come on, hop in, and I'll take you someplace warm."
"Not interested."
"Hey, I won't turn you in. You're not supposed to be in Wolf Lake. Climb in and I'll buy you a late dinner. Then who knows? We could go back to my place." She scoffed.
"I don't need your charity."
Except she did. "Who said anything about charity? Look, I know the game." He lowered his voice and scanned the neighborhood conspiratorially. "I'll pay, all right. Whatever you get per hour, I'll double it. Then I'll drive you home so you don't have to pay for a cab. From what I can see, I'm your only ride back to Harmon." Erica slowed her pace. She still felt sore from the bear man and couldn't escape his stench. This client was her ticket home, and Troy wouldn't know she worked again. If she agreed, she'd be able to pay Troy and pocket the rest. Hell, she could afford to buy breakfast tomorrow morning. Still, something about this guy sent a shiver down her spine. He paused at a stop sign, then followed Erica after she crossed a side street and continued northward. "Look, my wife walked out on me a month ago. I'm not some creep who pays for sex all the time. I'm lonely, and I don't want to spend all night drinking and watching sports highlights. Tell me what you make per hour." Erica glanced at the guy. His head hung out the window, one strong forearm resting on the sill. Red lights flared as he tapped the brakes, bathing the leafless trees in bloody colors.
$280.
Who the hell was she kidding? She hadn't commanded that price since she turned 15 and ran away from home. "No problem. Tell you what, 1 hour in bed, another hour talking over a late dinner or an early breakfast, your choice. Barbecued chicken or waffles with maple syrup. Like I said, I could use the companionship."
Was this guy serious? This would be her best payday of the year. She'd pay Troy and keep $400 for herself.
But she didn't trust this John. Lots of guys threw around money when they laid eyes on her long legs and high cheekbones, but came up short when it was time to pay.
"Show me the money, Jerry Maguire." "Oof.
I'm good for it.
You want 2 hours? Show me the bills or I walk home."
The man stopped the SUV in front of an old Victorian home with a wrought iron gate. Shadows from the tree branches hung over the sidewalk like the claws of some faceless beast. As she tapped a nervous foot, he wrestled the wallet from his pocket and flipped it open. She fought to hold her poker face. A thick wad of bills stretched the black leather wallet to the seams. For all she knew, the bills were singles, but when he pulled a fistful of 20s and 50s out, a happy butterfly fluttered inside her chest. "We good now?" She nodded. "Then get in before a sheriff's vehicle catches us." Erica rounded the vehicle. Shaking off the cold, she wiggled against the warm seats when he blasted the heat. The tracks left the curb and shot into the night. A minute later, they put the village behind them as Erica cast a wary eye at the mirrors.
"Where are you taking me?"
"Home," he said, not pulling his eyes from the road. The dividing line swept at them in a blur. "Not far now." Her eyes lingered on his knuckles. They were raw and cut. A spiderweb tattoo wound around his forearm. She'd been around the block enough times to recognize a prison tat. And if he did time, he might have gang affiliations. Shit, was he in the King's? Rumors circulated about the King's murdering escorts to hurt the royals.
"Hey, I'm having second thoughts. Why don't you drop me off here and we'll call it even?"
The man ignored Erica and stared through the windshield. His fingers tightened around the steering wheel. Sensing something was wrong, she reached for the door handle before he engaged the child safety locks. The tracks revved faster. Stars flew at the windshield as he stopped the gas. Fumbling in her pocket for the phone, Erica didn't see the fist before it slammed her cheek. Her head smacked the window. She screamed before a second punch dislodged her jaw. Tires screeched as the SUV jerked to a stop. Momentum whipped her forward before the seatbelt yanked her back. As Erica's eyes rolled back, he set a video camera on the dashboard and aimed it across the seat. Two meaty hands circled her throat and squeezed. She flailed her legs and struck him with an ineffective punch, the seatbelt pinning her back as memories hurtled through her mind. Her father dying in a car accident when she was 4. Mom's new boyfriend sneaking into her bedroom at night when she turned 12. Running away at 15 to escape the rapes. Her mother following her to the red light district of Harmon, braving the royals as she begged Erica to come home. Somehow, she knew prostitution would be the end of her from the day she left her mother. Starlight reflected off the knife as Erica fought to draw her last breath. The remorseless night faded to black. So there are some really good things going on in this first chapter. We do have a nice little tension of with this John Doe in the white SUV coming at her, the proposition, her agreeing, you know, because money makes a lot of us foolish, and the consequences. So that rise in action and then cliffhanger end for the first chapter, that works. I just don't think we needed all the context of the setting right there in the first chapter too. And again, I understand we're trying to do some establishing, some world building right away so people have a sense of what's going on. And her worry about a rival gang killing the gang in charge of prostitution, you still really didn't have to go into gang history at that point. You can just mention, you know, drop that, you know, she's affiliated with one gang, the other gang's been killing the prostitutes. That's it. You really don't have to go in depth in that. And the inn's history really could have waited. But I do appreciate he made sure to explain why you have a resort. It is a little bit out of town. Okay. And that's why she's got to try and somehow find a way back. Understandable. Got it. That helps show why she would be isolated and alone where she is. It works. So there are some really promising things here. It's just that tricky challenge of balancing the world building context for your location with the plot and the narrative. Because when you decide to start just going into some history, even if it's for a paragraph, when it's just a lot of dense data, the momentum gets killed. So it's really important for all of us as working writers to make sure we are finding that balance. Like, do the readers need this information now, or can it wait until a more appropriate time? Always a question we gotta ask. So we'll see what I'm able to find next week. Until then, folks, read on, share on, and write on, my friends. Cheers!